According to a new CNN poll, a majority of Americans, 55%, support the legalization of marijuana in the United States. That number jumped up 12 points from the previous year.
And other recent polls have shown similar results. Both Pew and Gallup also showed a majority in support of legalization. It's a major shift in attitudes in the United States, but why did the shift happen and why so quickly?
Joining us now to help us answer those questions is Martin Lee. He's the author of the book Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific. Martin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Well, according to the poll that prompted this discussion, support for legalizing marijuana has been going way up over the last quarter century. Back in 1987, it was just 16%, up to 26% in the 90s, 34%, 43% a couple years ago, and now majority support. What accounts for this fairly quickly changing attitude, do you think?
Oh, I think it's several factors. One is that generally, people's experience with marijuana has been relatively benign, if not positive. It hasn't had the negatives that people thought may have been associated with it. But also, people have witnessed the medical marijuana experiment in California that began in 1996 and other states that followed accordingly. And the result really wasn't that bad. There was no, you know, the sky didn't fall. The predictions of chaos and calmness just didn't transpire. So I think it's based on people's experience and a general distrust or cognitive dissonance with respect to the government. I think there's a lot of anger toward government in general in the United States at this point, and part of the focus of that reflects in terms of the distrust or the disbelief of what the federal government is saying about marijuana, which is that it is a dangerous substance with no medical value, and people see that that's basically not the case.
One of the most striking things I thought about the poll, back in 1987, when asked if smoking pot is immoral, 70% said, yeah, it's immoral. Now only 35% say that. So, I mean, apart from health concerns and things like that, there's just a very different moral attitude toward marijuana use.
I think in general there's shifting morals in the United States, not just with respect to marijuana consumption, but gay and lesbian rights and so forth. But the poll you cited from 1987, we have to remember that was the peak of the Just Say No era. Ronald Reagan was president, and there was a heavy, concerted effort on the part of the government to peg marijuana as the evil weed, to bring back that attitude or imagery that really goes back to the 1930s when marijuana was first banned by the federal government. So part of it is, I think, the federal government and the resource it's putting into depicting marijuana in a certain way. But after a while, you know, that negative image just doesn't hold water because it doesn't tally with people's experience.
We're talking about attitudes. We're starting to see a lot of action. First, you mentioned medical marijuana being legalized in more and more states. And now, this year, Colorado has its recreational marijuana sales legalization in effect as of last week, I believe, and Washington's will be coming into place later this year. Do you expect to see more dominoes falling state by state?
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I'm a journalist. I don't like to prognosticate about the future. You know, I don't have a crystal ball. But, you know, what will unfold in Colorado and Washington as a result of legalization, I don't think you're going to see, you know, millions of people rushing to try marijuana for the first time because they want to, you know, become recreational users. Most people in the United States who want to smoke marijuana are already doing so. I think where you're going to see a significant impact, again, is the medical sphere, because there's now these new types of marijuana products that are not very psychoactive. They don't get you high, and yet they have very significant therapeutic results. I think it's in this area you're going to see a lot more people who are not involved with the marijuana subculture begin to warm up to it. So I think, you know, as the experiments unfold in Colorado and Washington, when people in other states see, again, that the sky doesn't fall, that predictions of ruin, you know, don't transpire, it's more likely that other states will follow suit if they can discern a tangible benefit, for example, tax money being raised from the new laws and so forth. That's something that could sway legislatures in other states.
Among the things that people are still concerned about in Colorado now in particular is that legal pot will be cheaper pot, and it's going to be more available and affordable for teenagers who may suffer really significant health consequences if they start using it at an early age. Are you worried about that?
Well, again, most people, whether they're teenagers or grown-ups, if they want to access cannabis in the United States, whether it's in a legal state or not, they can do so. That phenomenon is already happening. I don't think we're going to see, huge numbers of new people coming on board because they've been waiting for the law to change to try marijuana. If you're a young person, you want to try it, you're probably already doing, whether it's for good or for ill. And as for young people and its effect on young people, it's quite ironic, I might say almost poignantly so, that in state after state today, in very unlikely places like Utah and Alabama and Florida and Kentucky, parents are demanding that their state legislatures change the law to make marijuana legal so that their children who are desperately ill with catastrophic seizure disorders and other kinds of things can access a medicine that appears to help others in with similar situations. So after all these years about hearing how marijuana prohibition was really about protecting the children, ironically, it's the children in desperate need of some kind of remedy or relief for their condition that is propelling a kind of a nationwide surge now for legalization that goes beyond just Colorado and Washington. As for the health impact of young people, teenagers, and so forth using street marijuana, that's a tricky issue and should be looked at carefully. But I can say one should be very, very careful about taking federal officials at their word when they proclaim negative things about marijuana, because their credibility is really in question given their track record in the past. And there really is no scientific consensus at all that actually marijuana is harmful to the brain, whether it's a young brain or older brain. That's not to say that people should be using it or should take it lightly, but the scientific consensus is not there. What the scientific consensus shows with respect to marijuana, that it actually affects the brain in a way that activates certain receptors that actually have a protective effect against the toxicity of alcohol, for example, and other toxins that could actually harm the brain. I know I just said a lot there, but the science is something one should look at very carefully, and one should be very skeptical of statements coming from the National Institute of Drug Abuse and Drug Enforcement Administration in this area, because it's really, I hesitate to say it like this, but it's almost that the drug war scoundrel's last refuge is protecting the children. And it really doesn't hold water when you look at it very carefully. You could argue, as some have, that it's prohibition of marijuana that puts children in danger, not the other way around.
As we see states changing these laws, there's already been conflict on medical marijuana between federal drug enforcement and state legalizations. Is that going to happen? How's that going to play out as states legalize recreational use of marijuana?
It's difficult to say. It's a phenomenon that's very difficult, I think, for law enforcement on a federal level or other level to contain at this point. And we can debate whether the Obama administration, the Justice Department, appearing to back off and allowing this experiment to unfold in Washington, Colorado, if that's the right policy or not. But you have to ask yourself, well, what is really the alternatives at this point? Tens of millions of people in the United States smoke marijuana. Millions more use it for medicinal purposes. How are you going to stop such a phenomenon? It's a weed. It grows practically anywhere. So realistically, the federal government can make things difficult, and state governments in other states, but they can't really stop this phenomenon. They can try to drive it underground and push it into a black market, but they can't really ultimately control it. And that's one of the great ironies. Marijuana is a controlled substance, and yet its use proliferates in an uncontrolled manner throughout the country.
We're talking with Martin Lee, author of Smoke Signals, about America's changing attitude toward marijuana. And we want to hear from you. Are you part of this 55% of Americans that polls suggest support the legalization of cannabis? Or do you oppose it? Would you like this to happen here in Wisconsin, what they've done in Colorado, legalizing recreational sales of marijuana? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org.
The news is next, and then we'll take your calls. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with Martin Lee, author of the book Smoke Signals, about the country's changing attitude towards marijuana. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think attitudes have changed over the past 25 years or so? A big jump in support, according to recent polls. Majority support for legalization, in fact. 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go to our callers now. We have Duncan with us in Appleton. Duncan, hi.
Hey, everyone. What did our nation's war on drugs, poverty, and I forget what other battles and military battles, we always demonize the foe. And my favorite story is in the mid-70s, a friend and I both got a broken leg on a motorcycle in the afternoon. Our friends came over with some pot brownies, and we ate them that night. And the next morning, the nurse said, "I've never seen two people sleep so well after a broken bone."
That's all right. Thanks for the call, Duncan. Let's tackle that first point, Martin, that if people characterize as a war on drugs, the enemy, in this case, marijuana, got maybe overly demonized, he says.
I think clearly that's the case. You know, marijuana prohibition going back to the 1930s, if I can be very blunt about it, is built on a mountain of lies. And people are seeing through those lies, and that's why you have one of the reasons why you have such a dramatic shift in attitude toward marijuana and the question of legalization. With respect to marijuana and sleep, yes, it is one of the things that people report, at least sometimes, some people, that it does help sleep. It has served as a substitute for drugs like Valium, and that's a positive because marijuana is not addictive, and you can't overdose in the way you can with Valium, which could be fatal. But then again, on the other hand, some people report when they use marijuana a lot, it disrupts their sleep patterns, and it throws off their. So I think one shouldn't take this lightly and to make too many assumptions about seeing it as a magic bullet for things. But if used correctly, if used well, if used therapeutically in a conscious way, it could help conditions like insomnia and or sleep-related illnesses, for sure.
Martin, before we go back to our callers, I'd like you to talk a little bit, if you would, about legalization as a political movement. What has been out there advocating for legalization, maybe from the lean years of the 80s with so little support until some successes for them today?
It actually goes back to the 1960s. That's when the marijuana legalization movement began. And at that time, there were many different social movements, an anti-war movement with respect to Vietnam, a feminist movement, a counterculture movement, a gay rights movement. So the marijuana legalization effort was seen as part of a broader movement, if you will, for social justice and civil rights in a diverse sense. And that's the origins of the marijuana legalization movement. And I think sometimes people forget that today. They see it as a single issue, that it's just all about changing the law on this particular area of concern, and that's the most that needs to be done. I really see marijuana legalization as a beginning, not as an end. And the question is, what happens after marijuana legalization? Does it become like big tobacco, and you have big companies that will be selling marijuana cigarettes to any and all concerned, or is it going to be a different model that might unfold? So there's been a long history for the legalization effort. Many different activists have been associated with it, and it's gone through its ups and downs. Certainly the nadir point was in the 1980s with the just same moment, as it were. But now we see it really cresting, the whole effort.
What would you like the future to look at? Would you like something like a big tobacco consortium be in charge of most of the industry, or would you like to see a different model, and what would that look like?
I think a different model should be looked at. I think when people talk about the potential economic benefits from legalizing marijuana, clearly if you tax and regulate it, it could fill the state treasuries from that. But One of the misconceptions is that somehow, you know, we're just waiting to untap or to tap into, unleash the economic potential of marijuana. The fact of the matter is there have been tens of thousands of families who have been getting by each year from growing an outdoor marijuana crop, sometimes indoors, particularly in Northern California, Southern Oregon, the so-called Emerald Triangle region of Northern California. That's the cannabis breadbasket. It's been a very important economic factor, a very strong economic medicine, if you will, for people in this region for a long time. The question is, how will it unfold in the future? Will it become something that will be monopolized or dominated by a handful of big corporations? I hope we can steer clear of that model because it hasn't necessarily been doing a lot of good for most people in the country.
Back to our callers now. We have John with us in Richland Center. John, you're on the air.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to say if I ever knew how much money we get from cigarette taxes, and you know our federal government is looking for more revenue, well, marijuana would be equal to or greater than that amount of tax revenue. And secondly, you would empty 20% of the jail population. And that means you would have to lay off 20% of the jailers. But then again, many lives would be saved because of the street violence. And President Clinton tried it. He advertised it on national media, but he did not inhale.
Gotcha. John, thanks for the call. Let's pursue that the criminal justice point. That's been an argument from some people in support of marijuana legalization over the years that we shouldn't be putting police resources into pursuing this, into incarcerating people. How big a factor is that, do you think, Martin, in the changing attitude toward marijuana legalization?
I think this general sense that the drug war with respect to cannabis has failed, that it hasn't achieved the goals that it sought to achieve. It certainly hasn't prevented people from using marijuana. And in countries like Mexico, where there is a great deal of violence associated with or directly connected to the prohibition of drugs in general and marijuana in particular, you know, that's a tremendous human tragedy. But in a state like California, where most of the marijuana is grown within the state that is consumed there, legalizing marijuana in California won't have an immediate impact on the situation in Mexico or on the political violence associated with prohibition, because Mexican marijuana isn't what's feeding the appetite of California marijuana users to begin with. But there's no question that law enforcement has a big stake in this. Probably law enforcement is the biggest obstacle in terms of legalizing marijuana. But there are some law enforcement officers, at least former law enforcement officers and officials, associated with a group called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who see through the folly of the drug war and who say that really it is a waste of good police time to be busting people for marijuana when there's far more serious matters for police to attend to with respect to law and order.
And one other argument I've seen is that, of course, the idea that marijuana is a gateway drug, is this gateway legalization? If marijuana, why not cocaine or heroin?
Well, the notion that marijuana is a gateway drug has been debunked many times, even by federal commissions and investigations. The National Institute of Medicine put out a report in 1999, which rejected this idea. This is a National Science Academy that was involved in this research. The idea that marijuana use leads to harder drugs. There's no, you know, sort of molecular or biological component to that. Yes, some people use marijuana and then later use other drugs that are more dangerous. But there's nothing inherent in the molecule that compels people to do so. There's many other factors at work here. In terms of legalizing other drugs, well, society has to assess that for itself to see whether prohibition makes sense. Not just with respect to marijuana, but with other drugs. The problem is, in part, that people have been taught for so many years how terrible marijuana is, and then they try it, and they see that their experience doesn't really match what the educators or the federal officials have been saying, and they become very skeptical about the serious dangers involved in more dangerous drugs like cocaine or heroin or alcohol, for that matter. And then they're more likely to try it. So you could say the stepping stone is really the prohibition when it's not based on facts. that's really a stepping stone toward more dangerous situations.
Martin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Martin Lee, author of Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific.